The enemy is upon us. It's time to dig in, to stand our ground, and watch for the next attack. You're in the Foxhole with Jason Mark.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to the Foxhole, where we stand our ground and watch for the enemy's next move. Today is Tuesday, January 16th, 2024, and today I have a very special guest with me. He is an author. What's that book? I think he sold a couple of them, right?
The Octopus of Global Control is the first book, and then the second one was The Controlled Demolition of the American Empire. Wrote that one with Berwick, and that helps because, you know, he knows everybody and everybody knows him. And then a third one called Hypocrisy that came out in 21.
Hypocrisy. Yeah. And you actually do one of my favorite podcasts, which is the Macro Aggressions podcast I watch over on Rockfin. I love that. You're so upbeat with it's kind of like if you got to eat a turd. You know, which is what we got to eat. You got to put a little sugar on it.
We got to laugh at the absurdity of it all. It came from writing the Octopus book, to be honest with you, because it was such a dark topic. You know, you're just like, oh my God, this stuff is so horrible that you're like, you know, just to spare the audience from like throwing themselves off the building, you know, you got to kind of like throw in some humor. So I had some fun with it and I lightened it up where I could. And I think that kind of carries over into macro aggressions. It's more like you can just sense my overall just exasperation with the whole system. It's just so unbelievably broken. It's done on purpose, which makes it even more frustrating because you know it could be fixed. And it's, you know, and I try to bring facts, which are sorely missing, but I also try to bring some fun too. Like you got to kind of have to laugh at the absurdity of it all. Cause there's some crazy stuff going on. And if you don't laugh, then, you know, then you're going to be like those people that were screaming at the sky when Trump got elected and it broke their brains. You know what I mean? Those people are cooked forever. So yeah, you got it. So anyway, that's my podcast, you know, because the books take so long to write and so much happens in between, you know, when you start here and when you finish and then it goes out and then you can never change it. And at least for the podcast, it's like every couple of days, you know, it's just like, cause there's so much going on. So it allows me the flexibility to kind of bridge that gap between like writing books that take like 2 years and having podcasts that can take like 5 days.
Yeah. And that's a point. The media cycle is so quick. I have a hard time doing I do two podcasts. Actually, I'm kind of part of a third one now, and they're once a week podcasts. It's kind of hard. Like you're watching stuff all week long and you're like, okay, I'm going to report on this. And by the time you get to the day you're going to do the podcast, it's like, that's old news. Nobody wants to hear about that anymore. Yeah. It is kind of rough. Yeah. But anyway, I wanted to talk because I've been talking to people about what I call the neo-feudal system, which is what they're trying to install now. I think your book talks about some of those people up top that are wanting to be the lords and the king and all that. And I kind of come across, in my mind anyway, how I thought of it in simple terms, like how did feudal systems begin? And can we look at that history and then relate it to what's been going on for the past 50 to 100 years? Because this has been a long game. This plan, this global control has been a very long game.
You hand it to them. They take a very long-term approach to this, multi-generational. Yes. Like these people that are doing a lot of the things that they're doing are never going to live to see, to reap the benefits of this stuff. So you have to, it's almost in a weird way, part of their sacrifice to it all is that like, they'll never live to see it, but they're so committed to the cause that they're going to, you know, of this new world order that they're going to do it anyway. And so that's really dangerous though, because anyone that can take a long-term approach like that can do what David Icke describes as the totalitarian tiptoe, where you don't go from A to Z all at once. You just go from A to B, and B to C, and C to D. And you just, it's just very, very, it's a fine line. So it's like incremental, whatever, removal of rights, deterioration of the money, you know, deterioration of your living standard, increasing inflation. I mean, it's just like a little bit here, a little bit there, you know, and like, if you take a long-term approach to it, you can bleed the entire society dry and tax money and make them poor and do that over 100 years and they'll never even know that it was you. So like, that's, you have to sort of like appreciate their psychopathy. It's like, holy shit. Like, you guys are not messing around. Like, you really have thought this out. But it doesn't matter, because the people that are in charge right now are incompetent morons that like Klaus Schwab and these guys aren't, you know, I mean, they think they're gods, but they're not gods. They make a lot of mistakes. Like, people are laughing at them. They're like parody of Bond villains and everything. And so like, it feels very, I don't know, it feels like this generation isn't really the best at putting together the finishing touches on a world government. They seem kind of stupid to me. Like they really butchered the COVID thing. Like, they thought everybody was going to line up. Nobody really, you know, there was a lot of pushback that they didn't expect that. They thought everyone was going to line up for a central bank digital currency in Nigeria. Half of 1% did. They're right. Legitimately shocked by a lot of these things when the people go, we're not doing that. That's stupid. So, you know, I mean, I'm optimistic in that sense that we've, if we collectively decide that we're not participating in their nonsense, it ends. But that's the trick, of course, is to try and get everybody to agree on something. Like, I can agree, like, I can disagree that you are mentally ill and you think there's 114 genders. Like, we could put that on ice for a minute. These people are trying to kill all of us. We should probably be paying attention to them in the world government stuff in the 15-minute cities.
I think they overtipped their hand. And you talk about the tiptoe method. They kind of broke away from that in the last 10, 15 years, and they're doing it all at once. That's the problem, is they're messing with the money, the financial. And I swear you read my show notes, because you just listed every topic or every tool. I'd say I have listed some tools: taxes, currency inflation, CBDC. Well, there's treaties that kind of break down your nation's lawfare, sure. Education system.
Oh yeah, that's a good one.
And then constant war or constant fear of an invisible enemy. Because, you know, if you go back to the feudal system, the feudal system began because, you know, people were kind of minding their own business. They're farming, you know, they got goats, they're doing whatever they're doing. Some people were nomadic, whatever. And then all of a sudden there's some kind of an outside threat introduced, which is probably a legitimate outside threat. You know, another collective nation comes out to the, you know, where people are just chilling and they say, we want your resources. They start raping, murdering, pillaging, taking your land. And so they get together and say, we need to be a collective and we need to put this guy in charge. Then that's how it begins. Then, you know, then the guy in charge says, well, I need an army. So to feed this, you know, so you give some people up, they go, well, I got to pay the army. I got to feed the army. So now we have taxation. Okay. We have to have a common currency. And then from there, it just goes downhill. You know, you fight the enemy and then all of a sudden you go from a defensive stance to an offensive stance, which we've done here in the U.S.
Oh, and it paralleled the changing of the naming, the nomenclature of the whole thing, because we went from the Secretary of War to the Secretary of Defense. And as soon as we became the Secretary of Defense, we went on the offensive.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like complete inversion, you know? So that should have been our first indicator that these people were up to no good when they start renaming things. I'm always suspicious of people that start renaming things, because it typically is like, oh, are you fixing some stupid problem? I mean, like my initial skepticism is like, oh, you're just renaming it. Smith-Mundt Modernization Act of 2012.
What? Yeah. Well, I think that these people that get in power, and going back to, like, you know, kingdom, like Robin Hood era stuff, you know, once the threat is gone, they don't want to give that power up. And I think that's
That's the biggest problem is that, like, once you get a taste of it, I'm sure it's pretty awesome.
Well, I mean, it's nice if you're sitting in your, you know, 25 room castle with walls and you have servants and you don't have to do any work. Of course you want to keep that lifestyle, you know? And so you got to have a new enemy. So you push out, find enemies. But that requires more money, which is either more taxation, or if you're talking about a fiat monetary system, inflation, you just make more money up, you know, and it makes everybody's lives miserable. And that's where we are today, is that we're so busy trying to just survive that everything's being stolen from us and nobody can do anything because we're trying to just feed our families. That's where we're at today.
And it's a great place to be if you want to control the population. If everyone is so busy trying to just stay alive, then they've got no resources or time left to worry about the predator class that's stealing everything that isn't nailed down. You know, that's what they don't have time to. There's no time for justice. It's like, I just have to work two jobs, or I have to do this, or I have, you know, everything's more expensive. I have to move in with my parents, or, you know, whatever it is. It's like, when you're busy doing that, you're certainly not caring too much about what's going on at the upper levels, especially you're like, I'm barely in control of my own life. I think I have time to manage what my government is doing, who doesn't like me anyway and doesn't care what I think. Like, what a waste of time. So, like, I can understand why people would get really detached from this and how it can get completely out of hand. That's sort of where we are. They've used the dollar, the world's reserve currency, and they've used it as a tool. They've used it to make countries do their bidding for them. They've used it to club countries into submission. They've extorted countries with it. They've turned off SWIFT banking system. They've stolen money out of people's accounts. I mean, the American government is a gangster organization, and they use the dollar as one of their weapons. I mean, you don't need to go start hot wars if you can just destroy countries from within through currency. And that's, of course, is what they've done. But here's the problem. That whole paradigm is coming to an end because people are starting to question whether or not they need the dollar. And you're starting to see alternatives to it. Alternatives that would have normally got you bombed are now happening, BRICS, and expanding, adding additional countries, and taking reservations for more countries, and going to a gold-backed currency, and selling oil in exchange for something other than U.S. dollars. And they are doing all of the things that America has been counting on other countries not doing. And in fact, the minute you start even thinking about doing something like that, we start dropping democracy on you or regime changing you. So the fact that it's happening and it's spreading so quickly is a sign that the dollar is in trouble. And with that goes, you know, America's going to have some big, big financial problems because of that. They just don't understand the mechanics of it. And since it hasn't happened yet, it's not on their radar. And it sounds maybe a little bit crazy because it sounds like that'd be an economic catastrophe. We're America. We can't have an economic catastrophe. Oh, yeah, you can.
Oh,
the minute the dollar isn't the world's reserve currency, we're Brazil. Like, by the end of the year.
I think it's going to be a cascading effect, and it starts with the BRICS nations that are getting off the dollar. And once other nations follow suit, we owe them and maybe they hold a lot of dollars, and those dollars are not worth as much as they think they are because we've inflated our currency. So I don't know how we pay them back. I asked Tony about this last week, you know, do we pay them back in gold? How do we pay them back? But when they find out that the debt that we owe them, and we pay them back, and it's not worth what they gave us, it's going to cascade so fast. And when those dollars come rushing home anyway, and we have so much currency floating around the market, it's actually going to fall on the American taxpayers' back. And actually not even the taxpayer, it's the savings and retirement. Because, you know, when they print, I always say this, if I earn $100 today, and I could buy $100 worth of stuff with it, but I put it away for tomorrow, but tomorrow it only gets me $50 worth of stuff. Where did the other $50 go? The $50 of labor, your time, your life. It was stolen from you by your federal government. So, and every time they print money and inflate the currency, it's a second and third and fourth and fifth tax on your savings because you lost that buying power. So I'm happy to see there's a lot of states right now. I think Texas is looking into it. I think Tennessee is looking into it. I've got some gold backs from Tony from Nevada. A lot of states are looking. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Are you a Wolfpack member?
I am.
Okay, cool. Me too. Anyway, yeah, I'll show them. I know we're on the radio, but I'm going to re-air this but so people can see what they look like.
I mean, they're cool looking, gold bills. They're like tiny, small gold bills.
Yeah, and the thing is that if they make too many of them and they inflate it, they're at least redeemable for the gold in it. So it's a kind of a self-correcting dollar, you know? But anyway,
I think a lot of people are forced to reevaluate and I hope at this point people are starting to reevaluate their relationship with their banks, because that's something that most people don't understand well enough. They open a bank account and they think that that's their money in that bank account, and it's not. You're an unsecured creditor of the bank. It's not your money. It's the bank's money. And they just passed banking legislation legalizing bail-ins so they can take the money legally. Not that they couldn't already, because it's their bank account in your contract, but just to make sure, just to make extra super duper sure, they went ahead and legalized it. So like, you know, that's coming. You just have to extrapolate out, like, why would they be doing that? The only acceptable answer is because they intend to use it. It's the only logical answer. And if they intend to use it, that means that they are going to steal your money out of your bank account, your bank, and you can't do anything about it. So if you know that in advance, or you just go, this guy sounds like he's out of his mind, but he might be right. What just reevaluate the relationship you have with your bank. Like, get some of your money out.
Try
all of your money out. You know what I mean?
Try doing that.
I'm not licensed to give financial advice, so I don't know anything, right? But like, just let's talk it out. Like, why? It used to be that your bank was like, well, that's the safest place to put my money. Well, what if it wasn't the safest place to put your money? What if it was actually like, what if you were better off digging a hole in your backyard and burying your money? Like, I'm, because that's where we're at. I mean, at least you know that the bank isn't going to take a part of it. Raccoons might, but your bank isn't going to. So,
well, you I know, mean, it like, physically exists. It's physically exists. Like,
or since we were talking about Wise Wolf and Tony and everything, why wouldn't you transform some of your wealth, some of what you've got? And I don't know that any of us are like, you know, have like a lot of wealth, but whatever you've got, like whatever savings you've got, why wouldn't you transform a portion of it from Federal Reserve notes that have all this like almost unlimited downside in exchange for something like gold, which at worst case scenario, you have a gold coin, which has always historically been worth something. I just can't understand why people wouldn't have some of that. Like, it seems like, I'm not saying like you have to have all, you know, buy all gold. I mean, I get it. You can't, there's not like, you can't go buy a loaf of bread with a gold coin, but, or silver too, gold and silver. Like, why wouldn't people have some of that? You know, it's going to be worth something, right? And just like as a hedge, just as like a in case of emergency, I've got gold and silver stuffed away somewhere. Like, oh my God, it just seems like the most reasonable thing in the world to do.
I have this conversation with a lot of people in our circle, you know, and a lot of them, they don't like the gold and silver thing. And I think you're right. It's some of it is the key. Diversify, because if it comes down to like, you know, we're using sticks and stones because the world is gone. You can't eat your gold and silver. No, you can't. I think in that case, ammunition, firearms, storable food, seeds, you know, heirloom seeds. I mean, those are the things people will trade for. You may be able to get away with fractional silver as a means of exchange of work. And I always use the example, let's just say I grow potatoes, but my potatoes are not ready yet, and you have eggs. So I want your eggs. Well, I give you a silver coin. Say your eggs are worth this much silver. It's just an agreed upon amount. And then later when my potatoes come back in, you give me that coin back for those potatoes. That's the beginning of currency right there. And it's real currency. So I could see that, but a lot of people think that that wouldn't happen. But let's just say we're not at the end of the world. We're just looking at hyperinflation. And the example I used earlier, you know, you earn $100 today, you throw it in the bank, you know, you can buy $100 worth of food from the grocery store, you throw it in the bank. Tomorrow you pull it out, but it only buys you $50 worth of food. Well, if you had bought some silver with that, you would have been able to sell that silver for $200 and still get your $100 worth of food by using $200 of fiat. So it's just a storage method that they can't tax anymore. You know, that's the key.
And it doesn't require, there's no counterparty risk, meaning like for your gold or silver to do well, it doesn't require somebody else to do poorly.
Right.
Just is what it is. You own it outright. There's no other person. It's not like I've got this side of the bet and you've got the other side of the bet. No, you've just got it. You know, but I'm with you. I wouldn't be an absolutist on any of this stuff. I'd have a little bit of everything. You know what I mean? Just to be, because you never know. But the thing that I always wonder about or I think about is that, you know, boy, like if you know, like we know that things are not good with the economy, and it's hard to kind of pinpoint when that dam breaks. But you just look at all the evidence and you go, just based on what I see, this cannot go on any longer. There's a variety of trigger events that can set this thing off. Like knowing what you know and not making corresponding moves, I think would be the worst thing in the world, right? To like hear all of this and like recognize it and go, yeah, that makes sense. And then not go and do the thing. Then when it happens, you're just going to be like, oh my God, I knew better. I should have done that. Like I should have bought Bitcoin at $700 when these people were telling, you know what I mean? Like you're going to make yourself crazy forever. So like be proactive, you know, like make some moves, do it while you still can, do it while it's relatively calm. And like the, you know, it isn't the end of the world.
So like, I'll give you an example of what you're talking about here. So I had a 401k or 401k, and it was, I won't say what it was worth, but it was getting up there. It was really getting up there. And I started listening to Tony, people like Angry Tiger. You know, me and Angry Tiger, we started Knights of the Storm together, and then we branched off into our own shows after that. But he makes a lot of sense. He's good at breaking it down for the guy who doesn't know anything, you know, like the average layperson, which was who I was. I wasn't a financial guy. I kind of knew how the monetary system worked, but I'm like, whatever, you know, I'll just throw it in the bank. Right. And then I had my 401k, and then my dad passed away and I received a large sum of money. And, you know, I won't say how much that was either, but what I did do is when I finally made the call, I said, you know what, I'm getting out of the stock market, because COVID, it was right when COVID started to happen. And everyone thought the stock market was great because Trump's in charge and everything's great. I'm like, this is what goes up must come down, you know, and I'm not going to be on the losing end of that. So my 401k was actually a self-managed one where I can get in there and move the stocks around myself. And I'm not a professional at it. So I said, you know what, I'm just going to throw it into gold and silver. And so I got a precious metals backed IRA, which Tony helped me with. It took a little while because, there was some technical stuff involved in my personal situation, but we did that. So now I have physical, not paper, physical gold and silver in Texas in a private vault, not a bank, a private vault. So it's like extra steps for the government to take that money or that coinage or whatever.
And that's what I'm talking about. I mean, there's going to be opportunities for people in the aftermath of this, because things change. this is changing. The dollar paradigm cannot go on forever. We've never seen anything quite like this, where we've got, you know, the threat of oil going through the roof because of what's going on in the Middle East. You do that, that shocks the marketplace. That's not good. We have interest rates that are doing weird things. I mean, we've got an economy that's teetering. We have banks that are, we've got Deutsche Bank, which is practically a zombie bank, ready to collapse at any moment. UBS, same thing. Any one of those can take down the entire system. So like, there's all these different things that could hit, and you just have to be not scared, because I don't think we make good decisions when we're scared, but like aware, and say, okay, well, if this were to happen, where would be the best place to be financially? Like, where would you want to be at? What would you want to be out of? Like, you made that calculation with COVID. Like, no, I'm not doing this. So here we are. And Berwick and I talked about this in the Controlled Demolition book. This was the sort of metaphor that we used, where we talked about how on the day after Christmas in 2004 in Indonesia, there was this huge earthquake and subsequent tsunami. And when the people went out to the beach that morning, there was no water. And they were like, where's the water? You know, like, they could walk like a half a mile out and there was nothing. And people were just like stunned, and they were out there and taking pictures and look at the starfish, and, you know, like, everything was completely exposed. But the people that had lived there for a long, long time, they understood exactly what that meant. And they knew that a gigantic tsunami was coming, that's the water comes out and then it comes back in 10 times worse. And so these people didn't sit around wasting time taking pictures down on the beach. They got their asses to higher ground and lived through it because they saw the signs and recognized what it was. And then they acted on it, and they grabbed the people closest to them, and they got to the hills just like all the animals did, instinctively. So, like, I don't know how we can look at the current situation, what's going on in the world in general, and in America in particular, and not think that there is a giant financial economic tsunami coming. So if you know this is coming, if you're looking out there and you're seeing that there is no water, don't sit around pontificating about it. Get your ass to higher ground as soon as you can and explain it to people later. You know, like, we need to act now. Because it just feels like in retrospect, it will be so obvious that this was going to happen. And people will go, what did you think, man? You guys were $34 trillion in debt, and you had a fractional reserve banking system, and you let a bunch of pedophile criminals run. What, like, your empire fell apart? Of course it did. Why wouldn't it? You know, so it'll all be so obvious in retrospect. But right now, I feel like people are just blinded by it. Like, they just don't or can't see that the water is gone. And I don't know what to tell them, man.
All the moves have been made, and you hit it in the nail on the head earlier when you said that, you know, they don't want any other alternatives. We'll just look at the U.S. as an example. They don't want any alternatives to the dollar. Bitcoin was kind of threatening. Gold and silver, they're trying to do capital gains taxes all the time. They're trying to pass that.
When they're not outright manipulating the marketplaces and getting busted and paying fines and doing all that stuff. Yeah. Suppress the price and paper shorting the market and doing all those dirty tricks that you can do when you have a magic printing press that just magically money comes out of it whenever you want. You can short the silver market and make it look like silver is unattractive, and you can do it forever. And they have been doing it forever. But at some point, the money runs out. You know, that's the thing, is that, like, at some point, you got to prioritize which sort of lies you're going to manage. And maybe the silver lie is just like, fuck it.
Let it
float or whatever it is.
They outside of demonizing crypto, and that's what FTX was all about, because crypto is a threat. So FTX was allowed to happen. So an FTX was not a crypto. I always tell people it was not a crypto. It was a crypto exchange that was mismanaged. And so, but that makes everybody like
a variety of purposes. It could deem it. It could work as long as it worked and funnel money to Ukraine, to all these dipshit, you know, from all these, Democratic morons. And then when it became a problem, then you could just demonize the entire industry and take it down and do all that. But of course, don't touch any of the politicians that he gave money to, because we don't want to press charges on that and drag that into court. But the rest of the stuff, let's throw this techno nerd in prison for the rest of his life.
As far as I know, he's not in jail yet, is he?
No, he is. They got him before his trial. Violated the terms of his release and got taken into custody before his trial even started. He was out on bail, and he was like using VPNs and shit. And he was just like, dude's just out of his mind over there, just doing whatever he wants, thinking that they're not going to know. So I don't know, man. You're right. Demonize crypto.
And the next
gold
thing,
and silver.
Gold and silver, they want to make it look unattractive. Number one, they're keeping the price down. Number two, they're trying to talk about capital gains, which I think a lot of states are passing laws that say you can't do that. I think Missouri is one of them. Tony Arterburn's talked about it, where they say it is currency. You can't tax it. I mean, whenever the price of gold goes up, it's not like my gold coins multiplied like rabbits. You know, so that you get, right. You know, it made three more rabbits. Now I got to give the government one. No, they caused the price of gold to go up because they overprinted money. And then they've made the gold go up in comparison, because gold doesn't really go up and down. It's the value of the dollar that goes up and down. And so then now you want to come charge me. So you already taken my savings through inflation. Now you want to charge me because I own gold a little bit more. So they're making that look unattractive. And then on top of that, Tiger talks about this all the time, the consolidation of banks. And they went through and said, this bank's not solvent. This bank's not solvent. Guess what? No bank is solvent. No bank. They're all insolvent because they've participated in fractional reserve banking. And now it's like no reserve banking. So basically, if you put your money in the bank, like you said, that's not your money. You've just taken on liability. That's all you've done. And they could close down any bank they want if they come in and audit them and say, where's your money? Because they don't have it. They made it up out of thin air. And that's, I think, what's happening is the consolidation's happening. Once that happens, I think all of these pieces play a part to usher in a CBDC. And I think it's going to be a global CBDC.
That is what they would like to have. Mm-hmm. And I agree with your line of thinking. I mean, you're not going to issue the CBDC without a crisis. The CBDC will be the solution to the crisis. The crisis will be that the banks collapse. The crisis will be the bail-in where they take all your money. The solution will be the CBDC. That's how you'd play it if you were actually serious about getting people into this. You wouldn't force the CBDC on them. You'd make them come to you for it.
Exactly.
I'll give it to you for free. I'll make you whole. What'd you lose in the bank? You lost 100 grand. I'll give you 150 CBDC. Don't worry about it. You're good for it. Yeah,
I got you. Better call Sal, right? But the reason we know this is coming.
Don't wait, though. We got to get you. We got to get you over in 90 days, or else the offer goes back down to even money. And then the offer after that gets even worse. And then the offer after that, there isn't an offer after that. You're just locked out. So there's ways that they could go about doing this, but I think about Nigeria. I think about what a failure it was in Nigeria. Half of 1% uptake on a CBDC there is a failure by any standard. The people, and they turned off the currency midway through just to force everybody into it, and everyone just went, "Yeah, we'll use Bitcoin instead." And they're like, "What? Wait, what? We half of 1% in Nigeria, in a country that has
some of these here to trade with your neighbors if you need to, you know, a little fractional silver." But I know this is coming for a fact because of a couple things. There's a couple indicators that maybe people don't understand that they're related, but have you heard of the 50 and 5 project?
No.
The 50 and five, it's 50 nations that are under, they're underserved. They always make it sound like, you know, victimized, underserved as far as the communications network. And it's kind of like making the unbankable bankable. That's another thing they've been doing recently. They're taking people who maybe they ruined their credit or they had a bankruptcy or whatever, and they can't get a checking account. They just can't. They're using things like Chime and these other prepay kind of services. Right. Well, they're trying to make unbankable people bankable so they can get them into the banking system. And
they are bankable with Bitcoin.
They don't know that, though. They don't know that. But then you got the 50 and five program, which is in 5 years. They want to have these 50 nations kind of high tech. You know, it falls in with the 5G. That's another thing. The 5G, we've got the Starlink. They're trying to make a global communications network that's high speed enough to handle all of the world's banking. And they're going to tie in biometrics into this. I don't know if people have noticed, but if you go to any place that has a newer card reader, take a look at it. You might have to kind of get the lighting angle right, but there's a little camera in there, a little bitty camera in some of the new card readers, so they can do facial recognition.
Interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. I noticed it. I went to the liquor store for my wife about a month ago, and I looked down and they had got a new card reader, and I was like, that looks like the front facing camera on my cell phone, and it was. I'm like, why would you need a camera on a payment method?
With the middle finger,
right? Yeah. So I thought that was, I know I've been researching this Mark of the Beast stuff because I think that's where it's eventually going. You know, I've been researching it since the mid 90s. And when I was looking up, RFID technology back then, they had it. I was in California at the time and they already had RFID chips. You can get a little, they called it a wand. It was a little keychain thing. And there were certain gas stations, kind of like a rewards card. You could just wave it in front of the thing. And it kept track like a rewards card, but it was a keychain, a little stick with an RFID chip in it. And I was researching all that, and the RFID, you know, talking about chipping animals, chipping people even. They were already talking about it back then. And for some reason, this word I never heard of before came up in all my research. It was biometrics. I'm like, what is biometrics? Now I know. I was in the military. We have biometrics on the people we scan, the hide system and things like that. But it's all tied together. And I think going back to my point is if you were to try to force everybody to get into this system, which I believe eventually will make you get a chip in you, or at least physically in our lifetime, I think physically carry a card or something with you. I think that all the indicators are there that they're working their way towards that because they're working on the technology for connectivity for places that wouldn't be able to use it. They're working on consolidating banks so they can crash them, controlled demolition. They'll take away all your money, like you said, but if you act now, get in on this new system. If you act now, you'll get 50% more, you know?
Oh, wait, there's more.
But wait, there's more. But I really think...
You want discounts?
But the average person doesn't know. They don't know why groceries cost so much more. You know, twice what they did last
year.
They
do. They just know that they feel it. But that's part of the problem that these guys face too, is that you run the risk of waking up the sheep. If you keep screwing with them so much, they're going to eventually turn on you. And these guys just have forgotten that's.
I think on the monetary side, people are not awake to it, but I think on, let's look at the COVID side. I think people have woke up to it because what did they do? They did event 201. And then you take a look at the SPARS document and then we have COVID. COVID was like the SPARS was like the instruction manual. So event 201 was kind of like the dry run and say, okay, how can we pass this? How can we get people to go for it? They talked about social media. They talked about all kinds of stuff to get the people to go with it. Then the SPARS was kind of like
SPARS using the fictional black wrapper.
Yeah. I mean, everything was
the urban communities. And then you see in real life, hashtag vaccines work. And then you look in the SPARS pandemic document and it says hashtag vaccines work.
Yeah. The names were only changed to protect the innocent, you know? But if you take a look at this next one, and I know we shifted gears there a little bit, but we're talking about the octopus of global control, and these are their tools. Right. Have you looked at catastrophic contagion? Have you looked at that one?
Yeah.
Yeah. That one, my big takeaway, maybe you could tell me what you thought about it, but my big takeaway was that they realized that there was no international body to enforce the international or the World Health Organization recommendations. That was the big takeaway. And then following that, we just now gave up our freaking, I don't know if it's, I think it's already passed, gave up our sovereignty as far as that. We had pretty much handed over legally the WHO can say, you have to do this. And then we say, you have to do this. So that was
they have
wargamed.
100% That exactly. That's the problem, is that when you see these things, when you see these studies, role-playing exercises, usually conducted by Johns Hopkins, Rockefeller connected, you see that these are dress rehearsals for what's coming, that these are dry runs, that they're testing things out, that they're workshopping all this to make sure that it you know, we made some mistakes with the messaging here, or we could have been a little bit more careful with when we roll out the fear part of the campaign. Oh, the social media campaign looks kind of I don't know, maybe we could revamp that. So like they fix all their little problems or anything, and then that stuff comes out in real life. And when you go back and you read these documents, or you watch the Event 201 presentation, which you can watch, these lunatics have conversations about this, you go, oh, I get it. This is all pre-planned. That's why you knew that. That's why these things are so similar. This is a made-for-TV scripted event. And then, what do you do with the information? Once you have Event 201 and then you see COVID rollout and you look at that and you just go, am I not supposed to point out the glaring similarities between these two events? Like, am I not down to the exact same messaging? Mm-hmm. Like once you make that connection, that person is completely uncontrollable from that point on. Like they just will never fall into, I mean, you can't, you go, oh, I see what's happening. These people are all lying to me.
But I think
getting people to make that connection, that's the variable, because it's like, you can't make them understand it. They just have to kind of figure it out at some point.
Well, it takes a lot of time, and it's buried. It's buried. Like, if I was to go through NIH documents, it's almost like a FOIA request. You know, if you request one piece of paper, they bombard you with so much that's irrelevant.
You've got to find the needle in the haystack for sure. But when you do, when you find the Kissinger National Security Memorandum in 1974 talking about America's policy towards the third world should be that of depopulation. When you find that diamond in the rough, then you go, all of the other stuff that they tell us, all of the official source, none of that stuff matters. This is what they're actually saying when nobody's around. So when you understand something like that, and you see COVID, you understand these are operations. These are not as organic or as authentic as you are being led to believe. And that's why sometimes we kind of look prophetic, because we're talking about things before they happen. Not because we have a crystal ball, but because we've read the script. Yeah. They've written scripts about it. We've read it. We just read the whole thing. That's how I know how the movie ends, because I read the script and I know, at least I know what they say is how the movie ends. We'll see. But like, Spar's pandemic document is almost exactly identical to what happened. Even down to the fictional rapper, even down to the Fauci character and the head of the CDC being run off, even down to that. And we called it in advance. I did a show on it in 2021.
Yeah, I remember. I remember that. It's another thing.
It's there.
you're talking about depopulation. I found this, you know, I always thought that, I guess I'll start with the migration, what replacement theory, you know, people talk about that, the immigration replacement theory or whatever. They say, oh, it's nonsense. That's nonsense. And I didn't really pay much attention to it. I don't really care. Right. Or I didn't really care. But then Vince Agnelli, I don't know if you know who he is.
Yeah.
Okay. Vince Agnelli sent me some links or a couple documents that talked about replacement migration was the word they used. And this is decades and decades old. And it was a UN document, I believe. And we also had some US, I think he sent me some US policy, which was a lot newer. But they basically, how would you know 30, 40 years ago, which countries were going to have a problem with fertility rates, excess deaths? They listed them. And they said that the country's going to be, it's going to be a shrinking population. Therefore, we need to bring in these migrants. And then you roll out this clot shot, okay? And then you open the borders. I think going back to this neo-feudal system, they realize that we're not going to stand for it because we're used to freedom. We've smelled it. We've tasted it. We fought for it in this country. And they need to get rid of us and replace with somebody else who is okay with it. You know, oh, yeah, I'm cool. I'm cool. And it also opens it up for a false flag.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, the false flag option is just you can see this. This is like watching a car accident before it happens, where you can kind of see it and where you're just like, oh, that car is totally going to bang. And, you know,
yeah,
that you can see this with the border situation coming a mile away. Where, I mean, you can envision all the scenarios, and I know I'm not putting any ideas in their heads, but some scenario where some these guys come in and they get absorbed into the United States military in exchange for citizenship. They get citizenship in exchange for service. And then they're not Americans, but they're in the military. So who fires on the Americans? Not the American military. They never would. But what if they weren't American anymore? What if they had been replaced? What if the great replacement theory is about the military as well?
I haven't thought about that. That's pretty profound.
Then you don't need blue helmets. Then you don't need the United Nations. Then your troops are the United Nations. They don't have the same loyalties. Maybe, in fact, they definitely don't. Their loyalty is we have to do what we're told to do, because if we don't, we won't get citizenship and they'll send us back to Guatemala or Chad or Sudan or wherever you're coming from. You know what I mean? So you got to do what they say. And if that means rounding up all those people over there in the suburbs and putting them in a camp over at Walmart or wherever, they don't have any sort of vested interest in making sure that they don't shoot Americans. I mean, they probably don't want to shoot anybody, but you're nothing special to them. In fact,
and they swear an oath to the Constitution. They swear an oath to a Constitution that they don't understand, right? And I know the military is perfectly capable of doing this
in the game, you know.
Right. Well, the military did this through COVID, right? That with the forced jabs. I was one that didn't take it, and I was worried the whole time I would get kicked out, but I made it through to my retirement. I know people that didn't, and it was completely unconstitutional. It was completely illegal. It was against military regulation. But the way they did was they just changed the definition of what a vaccine is, and that's how they tried to pass it through. But when I looked at it this way, when I signed my contract and I agreed to what it said at the time. If you have gone and changed definitions, then you've changed terms of service, and I didn't hit the agree button, you know. So
we're in the middle of the pandemic. Everybody's dying. The bodies are everywhere. What are we going to do? Global travel shut down. Everything's a mess. I know what we do. First, let's change definitions.
Yeah.
Let's focus on that first. Let's start changing definitions of all kinds of things. And you're like, hey, like, can't we take care of that when the pandemic's over? They seem to all be in a huge hurry to change definitions immediately about a lot of things. Why is that? That feels like propaganda to me. If I didn't know any better, I'd think that you guys were bullshitting me.
And then Pfizer, that never made a product before that, they've done nothing. They were a big money hole trying to chase this mRNA dream. Moderna, right? You're right. Moderna.
Moderna. Yeah, magically. Yeah, nothing. 0-for-8 until COVID. That'll hit a grand slam with their eyes closed, the final pitch.
Yeah. And it was pushed so hard in the media. And that's, again, going back to Event 201 and SPARS, that was part of the game plan there, was to push that. But I really think with this migration thing, I think that's very, very dangerous. And where I was thinking false flag, that's good insight on the military and the police as well. A lot of these places that the police are quitting, they gutted them. And I could very easily see them do it. We've long had a policy in the military that if you serve, you fast track to citizenship. I know several people that did that. I know a DACA kid that did that. He joined and then was able to fast track to citizenship because he was scared when Trump got in that they were going to ship him back to someplace he'd never been or he didn't speak the language, you know?
Oh, wow.
So hats off to him and his wife, both. She went through the process outside the military, but she was kind of covered because she's married to him. And then he went in the military to fast track it. And he was a really good soldier, by the way. Anyway, I lost my train of thought there. Where was I going?
Yeah. But and normally you can manage that process if you've got a healthy flow of whatever, but when you have 73% of Americans ineligible to join the services because they're either too fat, too stupid, or have a criminal record, then you're forced to look elsewhere. And that, and if you get an entire, like a mass influx of them, and they keep telling us military age fighting men, they keep saying that over and over and over. Yep. They want us to know that for some reason. It's getting in our heads. So, I hope I'm wrong, but it just seems like a couple, like not too many dots that need to connect for something like that to happen. Dick Durbin comes out and talks about it. And he says, you know, I wouldn't be opposed to fast tracking citizenship in exchange for some of these illegals joining our military, seeing how severely lacking our military is. I heard that and I went, I know what's going on now. Now it's starting to make sense, you know, but if not that, I mean, that's a component of it, but what about just the overall, what about the resentment? What about the resentment of the people that are actually in the immigration process trying to go through?
Ooh.
Thanks for waiting for 4 years and spending $50,000 on your lawyers and having 17 interviews that went nowhere with different people every time. Thanks for doing all that stuff. Oh, meanwhile, turnstiles are wide open. Every scumbag out of a Venezuelan insane asylum is coming straight up because the Venezuelan government, to their credit, frankly, put them all on a bus and shipped them up there to the border, got rid of them out of their prisons and nut houses and sent them to the United States as a present for trying to overthrow their dictator or government or whatever you want to call whatever is running Venezuela. So, I mean, that's kind of where we are now. We've got God knows who coming through the southern flank. We're desperately pretending like it's not happening, which is totally incompatible with reality. Mm-hmm. If you were a serious nation and all the things that we claim to be, you would never in a million years just magically leave the southern border open unless it wasn't for an agenda, right? I mean, right? They didn't just forget. Well, they're making it happen. I don't know if it's trilaterals or Obama or all of them or what, but a decision has been made that border is to remain wide open. For a reason. What is that reason?
Can you imagine this? And I'm not giving anybody any ideas, but this is a scenario I used on Saturday. We looked at New York, and I was looking at New York and their power, where they get their power and stuff like that. Some of it comes from Canada, but they have about 4 or 5 major corridors with these huge power lines, mm-hmm. and that feeds New York. Now, if you take down one or maybe two of those, it causes the others to be overloaded, which then it cascades out. And if New York's tied into, say, New Jersey, it's a cascading effect. If we ever see a global power outage, it's going to be because some major stuff was taken out and it caused a cascading effect and overloaded our power. And now we're switching to green energy. So, you know, it's not like the wind can crank up to make up for the difference. So can you just imagine if something like that were to happen? And it's not like we guard our power lines. They're just wide open. They run through the middle of nowhere.
No, we We could retrofit them to make them EMP proof for $2 billion for the entire United States, but we have to send that money to Ukraine instead.
Ukraine, their... or no, it's Israel now. Ukraine and Israel.
Oh, sorry, I forgot. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. Israel. Yeah, yeah. You can't have a fortified power grid to protect you from even forget your enemies, the sun, a solar flare, something right. that's a Carrington event that sends you back to the 1850s.
Yeah, and it would take us years. It would take us years to bring the power grid back up because we don't have the extra transformers on hand, and they take forever to build. They're not even built in this country, as far as I know.
Eh, so, forget about that. Let's go spend some money to see why peacocks,
Well, the reason I talk about the power grid possibly being an upcoming false flag event is because we recently had. And I'll share a story with you, but we recently had people shooting up these substations.
Yeah,
and it doesn't take much. Before that happened, about 6 months before that happened, I don't know why, but I was still at Fort Stewart, Georgia, and our PT route that we would run every day, we ran right by one of these the major substation there on base, and they put these Jersey barriers up overnight, which sucked because it put them right across our path that we run. And I guess that was to keep someone from like running a vehicle through the fence and into it.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's not like it was on a curve or anything like that where someone could accidentally fall asleep at the wheel and do that. You'd have to jump. Jump a curb, go through the grass. It would have to be intentional. So why would they have done that? And then next thing you know, we're getting these substations shot up. And then now we have all these immigrants coming in. That we don't from all these different countries that we don't know who they are. If we were to have a massive cascading failure of the power grid and they were to say, let's just say report that. And I can see Fox News doing this now, you know, the open borders are so bad. We just had two guys from Iran came across the border and destroyed our power system, our power grid.
Of course. Yes.
And then we're at war with Iran. You know, that's where I'm seeing it go, possibly. And then I don't know, it'll be the power grid. It could be anything. But I just smell a false flag coming probably in the next 24, 48 months to get us into another war. Yeah. That's what I think.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So, and just destabilize us psychologically, physically, maybe even. And just keep everybody in a state of fear and emergency, especially maybe even legally in a state of emergency. So that certain decisions can be fast-tracked without too much pushback. So it part of it is psychological traumatization. Part of it is legal. Part of it is keep everybody worried about, you know, that their finances and there's less time for them to worry about focusing on you guys, you know, doing what, you know, such a bad job or looting the world or forming a world government or putting nanotechnology in our food or whatever. I mean, it's hard to focus on that when you're like, I need to pay my rent. So
yep.
If you can keep everybody sort of busy, then you can slowly thin out the herd, which is of course what they've been wanting to do for a long, long time. So
I think they're trying to thin out certain people. You know, people like me and you that have been Americans our whole lives, that know what the government's role is and what it's not, and bring in other people. And then, you know, another thing that serves to do is internal division. And that's another big one, internal division. You got the Black Lives Matter, you got the Rodney King stuff, you got, you know, all these events that they then turn black against white. Now they're turning, you know, people against Palestine against Jewish people. I mean, there's all kinds of divisions. You got even the LGBTQ plus AI, whatever, they're turning against each other now too. You know, yes. As we are so busy fighting. And anyway, I just don't know. I don't know how to wake people up and tell them, look, stop fighting with each other and start looking to your government. They're the ones causing this. They're the ones they've captured the media. The media reports in a certain way to make us hate instead of hating the policy, we hate the other person. You know, we need to look at policy. I mean, why is George Soros allowed to spend money on these local offices that set these policies in place? You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. Yes, and, I do. But why? He should be arrested.
Yeah, he should.
He should have been arrested a long time ago.
Is he even an American? Someone told me he was dual citizen, but I don't know if I believe that. But
not sure. I don't know.
Anyway, yeah, definitely a lot of things to worry about, and it's going to put us into, like I said, a neo-feudal system. It's going to wind up being, you know, population reduction, and then the 15-minute city thing is a real thing. Have you heard of this NEC, NAC, Natural Asset Company?
Yes.
Okay.
That's fun.
Yeah, I've got the map here. Let me share the map. Maybe you can explain to people what the NAC is, because this map right here, and going back to, you know, dividing, conquering, thinning, and eventually pushing people into a place to be controlled. You'll own nothing and be happy. What are we looking at here, Charlie? I know you probably know more about this.
They want to set, this is United Nations type stuff. They're involved in this. They want to get you off of land. They want everyone in controllable places to the extent that they can. Of course, this is going to be part of a blending of North American Union eventually, which will be Canada, the United States, and Mexico. That's their fantasy. I don't know that that'll actually wind up happening, but they want to use the threat of you destroying agriculture and nature as an excuse to put you into basically like terrariums where you're not allowed to go out and interact with things.
I love that. A terrarium. 15-minute terrarium.
It sort of coincides with a 15-minute city. And the 15-minute city, you can be made to stay in your footprint there because of, you know, they could shut off your transportation to and from. That already happens in China. If you have a low social credit score, they can geotag your CBDC currency and make it so that it just doesn't work 15 minutes out away from where you live. It's just turned off, and you know, it's not accepted. So like they have ways to make you comply, you know. This is their fantasy for that is these tight-knit super cities, and you know, this group that's all sort of controlled. They're looking at China as the blueprint for this. So a city like Shenzhen that has social credit systems in place, has facial recognition cameras tied into everything, and fusion centers that are processing a ton of information, and AI that's running it, that of facial detection and biometric detection and all that stuff. That is the fantasy that they dream of. That is the fourth industrial revolution and the surveillance state that they dream of. The question is, like, are we going to allow that to happen? And you mentioned that we would be targets for something like, you know, getting rid of people like us, because we would remember a time before that.
Yeah. I'm kind of worried though a little bit, and I don't think this is going to happen. Maybe this is a 2050 part of the 2050 agenda, but I started thinking long and hard looking at this map. And if you're listening on radio, if you're watching this on Thursday, when I'll rebroadcast it on Rumble, you saw it, but the majority of the map is yellow. And that's a highly regulated use, which meaning you won't be allowed to go there. There quite a bit of it's red, which is no way, no how, no human use whatsoever. There was the little blue dots, which is where we will live. And interesting enough, the military reservations is a lot more land than where we'll be allowed to live. And that's just for training and maybe detention centers, things like that. But I try to think to myself, how would they accomplish this? How would they tell me to get off my land? How would they take my land? Right now, we have mechanisms in place that if let's say I owned 100 acres and I come across hey, I got cobalt here and I want to mine the cobalt. Well, the EPA already has measures in place in this country to say you can't mine there because we have a rare owl or something. And, right. and I could, you know, they could lawfare me to death. I could take them to court over and over. They could break me to where I can't even afford to start a mine, or I could just be refused to get the loans that I need to get the equipment and, you know, manpower and stuff. There's already ways to stop people from using their land to do what they want to do in certain situations. But then I was like, well, that's fine. They still can't take my land. Well, no, actually they can. If they get the CBDC in, and me and Charlie here are trading in sorghum beans and whatever, you know, trading in whatever, silver, gold, bullets, guns, we're trading. Mm-hmm. Okay. They can sit there and say, okay, well now, you have to pay your property tax in CBDC. We no longer take cash.
Right.
Boom. Now they got you. And plus, if you haven't noticed, they're raising property taxes. My house in Georgia, I got a bill and I'm pretty pissed about it because I sold that house. And in my closing documents, I paid the prorated, you know, up to the day of closing, I paid that money already. But they sent me the bill because I owned it at the first of that year. And I called them and said, talk to the closing agent, talk to the attorneys. So now it's on me to prove that I don't owe. I'm just hoping to God that the guy who bought it, that his bank has got the escrow set up and he's going to pay that, because that money was supposed to go into their escrow to kick it off. Right. So hopefully, otherwise I'm going to be fighting Georgia about that. But my back to the point, my property tax, when we moved in and we were there almost 5 years. We moved in. It was, I believe, under $2,000, maybe a little over $2,000. And in that short 4.5-5 year period, it went from $2,000 to $6,000. Wow. Now did my house value go up by a factor of 3? No. It did for a while and then kind of went back down. But why did my property, and that's how they're going to get us out of our property, folks. They're going to make and I talk about this all the time about how they keep people in debt, got them to refinance. They're going to take your property through foreclosure or through voluntarily giving it up because you can't afford it. So you downsize or you sell it, or they're going to foreclose on you, or they're going to property tax you out where you can't afford the property tax anymore, even if you own it outright. And in that case, we did own the house outright. So that was a tough pill to swallow every year when we would get that bill right around Christmas time.
It's like paying rent on your own place. It sucks. Yeah.
And if you were extrapolated that out, even if my house is paid off and I'm not paying a bank note on it, after so many years, I've paid for the house again to the county. You know,
and if you're in California, your property taxes go to pay for the schools that are putting in third bathrooms, mandatory.
Yeah.
Enjoy that.
So the third is so that, you know, if you don't know what sex you are, you can just go to that one. Well, at least they're not going in each other's, so that's good. Anyway, I see that being the way that they're going to, and if you notice BlackRock and Vanguard, those two companies alone, I was reading an article that it was like by 2027, they were going to own about 70. They are anticipated to own about 70% of single family homes and the property they sit on. So the motion is in play, you know, things are in motion to accomplish this plan. If that's what they're trying to do. I don't see it happening by 2030, but I do see this a possibility by 2050. So,
yeah. And I've been in real estate for 25 years. I've been a broker in California and Nevada. So I've seen some crashes. And I remember when Goldman Sachs was in there buying up everything in 2011 when prices had cratered. I remember that.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you look, we were putting some charts. I don't have them ready to go, but of course foreclosures dropped dramatically during COVID because they put a moratorium on the foreclosing, right? But they're already back up and actually get a little bit above pre-COVID levels right now, and I anticipate that going up. I foresee it going up even higher. I don't know if we'll get to like the 2011 2012 levels. That was pretty bad, but it could. Right now what's happened is people spent a lot of money during COVID. They got a little bit of stimulus, but they spent a lot of money because everything was at a premium. It was Grubhub and, you know, DoorDash. So everything was at a premium. A lot of people didn't have an income. You know, fortunately I was military, so I'm still getting paid. Thank you, taxpayers, for that. But anyway, so they ended up floating a lot of stuff on their credit cards. And I talked about this before. You know, if you've got a 19% interest rate on a credit card that's maxed out, maybe three credit cards that are maxed out because of COVID, because of lockdowns, and you got a 3.5% rate on your home mortgage, you know, refinancing looks like a really good option. Oh, but guess what? They jacked up interest rates. So now we got inflation happening. So things cost more. I can't afford these credit card bills and to feed my family and to pay my mortgage. So let me refinance. Yeah, it's going to be a 9% interest rate, but it's better than the 19% interest rate on the credit cards. So let's go ahead and do that and pay these credit cards off. So, but now more inflation, crap, I can't afford to feed my family because food has gone up by a factor of two or more. And now I got this brand new note that looked good at the time, but I can't pay it now. So what do you do? I mean, all the things are in play to take people's property. That's what I see happening. And they used, you know, the credit cards were just another way for the banks to make money. The lockdown was really good for the banks. Anyway.
Well, always is. Yeah. All these scams are always, you know, financed and put into place by the bankers who make a fortune from it. Because when know what's going to happen before it happens, you can plan accordingly. You can get yourself in a position to benefit from it. Be you a bank or just somebody like us that knows that this current banking paradigm is unsustainable, that the dam is about to break on all this stuff. You need to get out of the way. Like, you know, so if you see that, if you recognize that, the next thing is you got to do something about it. You got to like actually make a move.
Yeah. Well, going back to what I was talking about with my 401k and then the money I had in the bank, we put a significant amount of the savings we had into physical gold and silver that we maintain that. And then the 401k. And then if I took a look right now, if I look at the old stocks that I held and where they would be today, and I looked at the money we took out of the bank and put in gold and silver and what that would be worth today as far as what I could buy, purchasing power, that was a smart move, a very smart move. Right. Even if it's just temporarily to get it out of the market and out of the fiat until I could figure out what to do. Maybe I wanted to buy property. And that's what we're doing right now. I'm actually building a 30x50 workshop because it's a physical structure that I own. Right. And it increases my property value. It's somewhere I can store stuff. It's somewhere I could work. I could start a mechanic shop out of there if I wanted to. It's a useful tool and it holds its value. You know, as inflation goes up, the value of that property should go up as well.
Yeah, you just transformed your money from Federal Reserve notes into a brand new workshop. And that's going to be the smart move. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
But you've got to think like that, you know, and then you've got to do it.
Oh, real quick on the gold and silver. Do you have a promo code with Tony?
I have a website. I have macroaggressions.gold.
Okay.
That's where I was sending people to that. I do that. I do his ad during my Flashback Fridays.
Okay. Cool.
There. But yeah, I you know, it's good. It's always good to have a gold and silver guy.
Yeah, I'm fortunate. I live about an hour and a half away from Tony, so I get to go down there once in a while and visit.
Oh, nice.
And I always pick up something when I'm there, except the Christmas party. I just picked up some pizza and ate it. But anyway, I kept you on for an hour and 10 minutes already, hour 13. Can I ask you one more topic? It fascinates me, and I've heard you talk on it before. Tell me about AI and how AI plays into this whole global control, because they're working towards transhumanism, and it's fascinating to hear you talk about it. So,
well, it's the transhumanism definition that has me worried, because it was created by Sir Julian Huxley in the 60s as a rebranding of eugenics, and eugenics is depopulation. So, if we know that eugenics is depopulation, and Julian Huxley is running the British Eugenics Society, and it's really like kind of hard to sell Eugenics Society. Everyone knows, like, oh, you are the people that are trying to depopulate the earth and murder everybody, right? So they came up with a new name for it. And he said, let's call it transhumanism instead. So when you hear these lunatics like Klaus Schwab talking about the fourth industrial revolution and that it's transhumanism and that they're going to use artificial intelligence to run all this, you just go, well, I know what transhumanism is. That's depopulation. So are you telling me that your sales pitch is depopulation? Because I'm not interested in that. That's that. And you're going to use computers to tell me to, no, thanks. I'm good. And then Elon Musk goes, well, we have to put the good brain chip in before they put the bad brain chip in. And you're just like, am I on drugs? What are you guys talking about? No brain chips for anybody. Stop it. We're not doing the transhumanism thing. Like, when your computer or your phone stops working, you throw it away and you get another one. When the chip in your head stops working, now what do? Like,
you're done.
I mean, have we not even thought like one step ahead? It's just the whole thing it's so wild, but that's where they want to take us. But again, we've got to just get comfortable and we have to understand what the terms mean. Transhumanism isn't, we've got an artificial arm for a guy that lost it in a farming accident. This is totally different from that. This is, we're putting nanobots in your bloodstream so that we can track what you're eating and your insurance provider can manage your health premiums based on how many Cokes you've had this week or if you've smoked cigarettes or whatever. We're talking about that level of stuff. And that is terrifying.
That's like the thing you plug in from Progressive into your OBT to OBD port in your car. Is monitors your driving to save your rates? No, that's right. Not for that.
It's exactly.
Not. So where I see this going, and I'm trying to tie everything because I look at all these weird things, you know, like the line, you know, the 15-minute cities. Look at COVID. Looking at bird flu, how they get one positive case and they cull 6 million birds. Looking at people uploading themselves to the cloud. When you put all this together. And then you're looking at this, the natural asset companies and pulling people off the land and putting them in one spot. That's like a chicken farm, folks, like a chicken farm, a 15-minute city. Yeah. Everybody's there. So I don't think that they want to depopulate the whole earth or meet the Georgia Guidestones requirements just yet because they need us producing food. But they're working on that. Bill Gates is working on lab grown meat, right? They're working on basically robots. Robots and AI will produce the things that the elites need, okay, and the rest of us will be useless. So let's get us in some 15-minute cities. Let's see how many people are going to subscribe to this. Oh, I'm going to upload myself to this computer, and really, you just die. There's a copy of you there that maybe your wife, maybe you're getting ready to die. Let's say you're going to die in a month. They say, hey, we can offer you this. Upload yourself to this cloud here. And then your wife, it's just a copy of you. It's an AI pretending to be you. And then your wife says, oh, maybe I should upload myself so we could be together. Now you've just got rid of some people, right? Then if you need to get rid of more people, you just get a mystery X, which now we're already talking about this virus X. You know, it's going to be an ongoing thing. Oh, virus X hit 15-minute city A, and this quadrant needs to be culled.
You sank my battleship. It's such a crazy, don't forget medical assistance and dying in Canada, which they've legalized euthanasia there, like making it trendy to kill yourself and then change the language on it too. That first it was like, you can only do this if you're on the Canadian healthcare system and death is imminent.
Wasn't that for all of us?
Then they change it. They're like, and death is reasonable or something like that. And you're like,
oh, wow.
What? That's the criteria. It's like, girlfriend dump you? Feel like you're dying? Come on.
We're going to lose all the teenage girls that get dumped, you know, because they all go through that. Oh, my gosh.
There you go. So, I mean, you have to kind of, I don't know. I look at all this stuff and it's so crazy. And, but you have to kind of laugh at how absurd it all is, right? I mean, as long as in the end we've defeated the 15-minute cities and they haven't gotten the central bank digital currencies past us, and you know, as long as we win, we'll look back on this and go, boy, this was hilarious. Like, they were trying all kinds of crazy stuff. Remember when they tried like to get us to walk one direction down a grocery store aisle or stand on a dot 6 feet apart? And then you're like, you're looking at all this and you're going, are you stupid? What is happening here? Where am I? Am I surrounded by morons? Stop doing this, people. Like, you stand wherever you want to stand. You go to whichever direction you want. Like, it felt, but I'll tell you what, it was a great it exposed a lot of people. It showed me the general public, by and large, are a bunch of brainless sheep that will do whatever they're told to do just because they don't like conflict, or they don't want to push back, or they're not critical thinkers, or they're just flat out stupid. I lost a lot of respect for people during COVID.
You know, in the military, right before I retired, the people who got the jab, most of them didn't want to get the jab, but they knew it was going to be mandatory, and then it was mandatory. Even the holdouts eventually folded. I think I was the last one. There was one other guy that didn't get it in my unit that made it to retirement before me, but I was the last one. And they made sure that my command hated me because they had to do weekly reports. Until they were at 100% compliance, they had to do a weekly report on me.
And so they made you responsible for giving everybody more paperwork.
Exactly.
As a punishment.
It was a punishment to my higher ups, but believe it or not, I did get some pushback. I got treated differently. It really, really sucked, but there were some people and some of my upper leadership. I wish they would have stood up and said, this is bullshit. It's unconstitutional, but they wanted me to get it, but they said, we respect that you have a waiver pending, and they didn't reprimand me in any way. And one guy was actually a little bit supportive. So one of the officers above me, I had one officer try to get me an Article 15, which would have reduced my rank and all kinds of stuff. It would have been really bad to have at the end of my career. Never had one in my career. But she's trying to reprimand me, and her superior said, "You can't do that. You can't do that." So that was really nice.
If it had been up to her, if it had been up to her, she would have punished you for not getting with the group.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway,
that's what shitheads do. you know what I mean? That's what people that are not on the right side of history do.
Yeah. Well, back to the point though, was all the other people, they didn't want to get it. I think there was a little resentment that I stood up and they didn't, so I had to get it. And then they're all like, "I'm not getting the booster." I know one person that went and got the booster because the booster wasn't mandatory.
Really?
Yeah. Just the two series or the J&J, the one shot. Mm-hmm. But they all did it reluctantly. And then at the end, the mask was off. And they were talking about, the shots don't do anything, the masks don't do anything, COVID was BS, blah, blah, blah. So I think they overplayed their hand, and a lot of people are woke up now. And I know this happened in Australia, and they didn't report on it. I have a friend, Harps, he's a viewer of David Knight's, and he's a friend of the show. But he was saying that they pushed back hard enough in Australia that the cops pulled back, because they were starting to get very, very militant about masking and jabbing and all that stuff. And the people pushed back.
People in camps in Australia. Yeah. I remember like kids like getting out of like the hiding and like trying to transport themselves out and like escape from these camps. And they were getting caught by police with like dogs chasing them. Crazy stuff like that.
I saw a video of an Aboriginal woman. So they went out into the bush to vaccinate these people that aren't around anybody. They're not getting COVID, and they're walking around, and one guy's got this lady by the arm trying to convince her to get the shot. And she's like, "No, no, no." And she's moving. And this other guy's got the needle following her other arm around. I'm like, "Are you serious?" It looked like they're going to hold her down. Now, I don't know if they jabbed her or not, but they were trying to talk her into
doubt it. I wouldn't doubt it. That's such a weird, like, at what point do you not recognize that this is your bad guy in this scenario?
Yeah. And I think a lot of people in Australia pushed back hard enough. I think the police realized it, but they did. They stopped reporting it when the people won. We saw nothing on the news. And I've been trying to get Harps to come on and talk about that. Cause he showed me some videos that we won't see here in the US and the news won't report on it. But yeah, the people won there. They won. Now for how long, I don't know, but anyway, if you were to go back to the '80s, and let's say we were in there watching the release, you know, we're little kids and we're watching the release of E.T., you know, and that was a great movie. That's, I mean, we're looking at this fantastical thing that we'd love to believe, you know, love to believe all this stuff. And then we walk out and then some guy comes out and says, hey, by 2024, this is what's going to have happened. We would think you're nuts. You're freaking crazy. You know, there's no way this would happen in the U.S. There's no way this would happen in Australia. There's no way this happened in Europe. But here we are. So going forward, and I guess I'll get ready to wrap it up. I'm sorry to take up so much of your time, and sorry for
I've been enjoying I've been enjoying just talking about the state of the world. I mean, at least how we see it. It's open to interpretation, of course, but.
Yeah, like if the, you know, come out of the E.T. movie and some guy tells us we would be exactly where we are. Because he's read documents that say we're going to be here. Yeah, I wouldn't believe him. So going forward, you know, people like yourself, people like Tony Arterburn, David Knight, you know, when they're talking about what the elites are planning, please take it seriously. They know a hell of a lot more than I do. I'm just been doing this stuff for about a year and a half now. And it's almost too much to grasp. And it's almost, you talk about the tentacles, the eight tentacles of control. Yeah. They're all connected. You know, your mass immigration is connected to CBDC somehow. It's connected to this natural asset company somehow. It's connected to interest rates. It's connected to, you know, what the banks are doing. Everything is connected. It's all part of the plan. And that's what's hard. It's what I call an asymmetrical attack. They come at you from all these different little angles. And even if you know what's going on and you're reacting to it, they run the main attack straight through the door because you're busy with these little side attacks. So anyway, Charlie, what's your final thoughts? I know we talked about a lot. This was actually not the conversation I was planning on having, but it was great. It was better than
we sort of went where the conversation led us, I guess. So, yeah, my final thoughts are that, you know, 2024 is set up to be a very unusual year with an election. And so keep your head on a swivel. Keep a good sense of humor about things. Recognize kind of where we're going. Be honest about it. Don't get normalcy bias. Don't get yourself too freaked out either. I'm not saying go around like paranoid lunatic, but like be a little bit more quick to be proactive as opposed to reactive, you know, like what's the worst that can happen if you do these things now, do them sooner rather than later, just in case, you know. I feel like it seems like a smart thing to do. And just focus on what's important, you know, your health and your family and your friends and the people that you can reach out to. And there's a lot of stuff that we get bogged down in that we can't change or even, you know, do anything about. And we get worried about it, like stuff that's going on a million miles away. And we're all focused on that. And it's like, well, don't let it like destroy your physical body or your soul. You know what I mean? Like prioritize your energy. You're going to need it. That, I guess, would probably be the best way to wrap it up is just prioritize your stuff, emotional energy, physical energy, your money, prioritize all this and get yourself ready just in case.
Excellent. That was one of the topics I did want to cover. We won't go into it, but the preparedness side of it. Now you emailed me, I emailed you and asked, cause you talked about it on, I think Tiger's show or somebody's show about the dollar store.
This list of stuff I had put together to build like this crazy emergency earthquake supply kit for whatever. And then I had mentioned that it was like an idea that I'd just make them. Like I went to the dollar store and got most of this stuff. Like you could make one for yourself. make a backup one, make one for your family, make 10 of them and sell them online. You know what I mean? Whatever. But yeah, I had sort of put that together when I was in California. We had earthquake situations there. And so I'd put an earthquake kit together. And I was like, you know, this really kind of works for everything.
That's a good like for a grid down situation. Basket, and
like a Foot Locker style thing that like opened and folded. You could fit all this stuff in there. I just made a huge, crazy like kit, I guess. But what was interesting was that it was like all of it was like really reasonably priced. Like you could put the whole thing together for not much money. So.
Yeah, I'm going to break the list down into like a handful of items. And every time I go to the store, just picked up those items. And that's what I'm going to do. But anyway, I was going to ask you, I already had Angus Mustang. He's my co-host on Knights of the Storm. He had requested that list and I emailed it to him. I forwarded him the email. Is it okay if I post that on our website for people?
Yeah, of course. Okay. And it's not meant to be like an exhaustive list. Of course, add to it for those of you people out there. And there's a lot of stuff that maybe I didn't even think of, but that was just the list that I had put together and I sort of made it. I got all that stuff. I not all from the dollar store. So some of it, like the water, I had like the prepackaged water that comes in these little pouches that you can throw in there. I had a bunch of those and those are always good to have, but yeah, for the most part, it seemed like something that you could use. It seemed like something you could give away, and it seemed like something if you needed to you could trade with or sell or whatever. But again, you have to be proactive and you can't be buying all this stuff after the collapse is here. You gotta be sort of early on that, so that's why I'm saying, like, just think like these preppers. We owe the preppers an apology. We're sorry. You guys are right. You're crazy, but you were right.
Well, hey, let me show everybody your website. This is
I got a new one. Go to a different one instead. Macroaggressions.io.
Let me check that out. I did not know that.
We just started it 2 weeks ago. So, but yeah.
Hopefully I spell it right. Oh, I probably didn't spell it right.
MacroAggressions, macroaggressions.io.
I missed a G.
Yep.
Here we go. My internet's been slow here recently. I don't know why. But anyway, while that's loading, this is the book. I don't have this one. I just ordered this. I should have ordered this thing a year ago, but I never did. It hasn't arrived yet, but I'm going to actually read this.
The Octopus book? The Octopus book is great.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I've almost read it already because I've watched enough of your podcasts.
I know there's some overlap there, but you got to get the Octopus book because of the quotes. The quotes are the best part because it's not me. It's other people's words in there that are, that sort of point to their criminality and everything. So it's such a crazy book. People read it. I get emails all the time from people that are like, what a game changer it was for them, so
this is a really clean website. Really, really clean.
I know, we that's what I wanted it to be, like, real easy to navigate, not too much going on there.
All right, Charlie, well, I'll let you go. I really, really appreciate you coming on, and I know we talked almost a year ago. We talked almost a year ago, and then there was scheduling, and then the holidays happened, and then I retired and I moved. So anyway, I'll go ahead and get us out of here. So I guess that does it for tonight. Remember to hold your ground, watch the enemy, improve the foxhole, and always look out for one another. Until next time.
You've been watching The Foxhole.
I don't know why it's not playing the outro. I guess it didn't play the outro. But anyway, we'll go ahead and take off. All right, take care. I'm going to end recording, and we will see you.